and methinks they're all the right ones. Sex has become bloody weird. Incredible, but weird. She's a few blocks south of the church, and she's throwing off pheromones that make my dick go flat to my stomach. And by the time I realize what's happened to Danny, I have one more reason to hate rioting in the whole fucking world, as if I needed one. No! I roar as I rush for the edge of the roof. That's the bad thing about being a half-breed. The Highlander in me wants to take the stairs. The Unseelie in me wants to use wings. Too bad I don't have any yet. My heart makes the decision without me and tries to get to her the fastest way possible. I jump. I curse as I plummet four stories and brace for impact. Contrary to what she thinks, I can't sift yet, so I can't cut out of this fall. What kind of idiot breaks all his bones at the precise moment his damsel needs him the most? Up to now I've been glad I can't sift yet. I think it's the point of no return. The day I can blink out of existence and back in at a mere thought, I'm no longer human. I twist in midair, trying to land on my feet. I'm astonished when it works. I discover new things about myself every day, most of which disgust me. But this is a welcome change. My center of balance has shifted. I pivot and realign flawlessly. My bones seem to have developed an incredible rubbery resilience. My knees bend slightly, bowing in a distinctly inhuman way to absorb the impact. I land like a graceful cat. I stare down at my feet, which are intact and functioning perfectly. And all I can think is, bloody hell, I just fell four. Bring her out here. Now, you buggering idiot. My head whips up. Some teenage guy wearing glasses is standing outside the church, looking in, screaming at Riordan. I have no idea who he is or where he came from. But he just said my line, although I'd have done it minus the buggering part and with a lot more fucks. The kid's hands are fists, and he's plastered up against the door jamb of the church. His face and hair are frosted, and he's shivering violently. I push past him, shouldering him aside. She doesn't need you, worthless human. Get lost. He snarls at me. I laugh. Looking me in the face and snarling takes major balls. Kudos to you, kid. Now take yourself off somewhere and die before I decide to cram those big balls you think you have down your throat. I shove into the church so I can rescue Danny and kill Riordan for taking a hothouse flower into the Arctic zone. The cold hits me like a brick wall and stops me in my tracks. A solid shell of ice forms on my skin. When I flex my muscles, the ice cracks and falls in a tinkle of crystals to the floor. I take another step into ice. Mid-step this time, while I'm still moving. I spent a small eternity in the Unseelie prison. I never had this problem, and it was inhumanly cold there. I'm half Unseelie prince. I didn't think there was any place too cold for me. How can that dickhead Riordan tolerate it if I can't? I take another step, ice again, crack it and step back. It wouldn't do me any good to freeze up like the Tin Man and become useless to her. I don't understand how this is happening. The cold in the Unseelie King's kingdom iced my soul and made me hate being alive. This is worse. I wouldn't have believed there was anything worse. There's something familiar about this place, this scene, this cold. Deja vu. I despise this cold. It makes me feel bad in the center of my bones. Empty. Hollow. Somehow flawed. I narrow my eyes, looking around. Danny. She's on the floor, and it's not the cold that takes my breath away. Her jeans are tangled around her knees. She has on a black bra and underwear with little white skulls and crossbones all over them. She's thrashing her arms and legs and crying incoherently. And I can't get to her. My girl is half naked and dying, and I can't get to her. I push forward. My eyes solid. I crack it and pull back. Fuck! She's trying to kick off her jeans the rest of the way, and he's fighting her, trying to keep them on. He needs to get her out of there. Why is he wasting time trying to keep her clothes on? Bring her to me, I demand.
Don't freeze frame with her,
the kid on the steps bellows. He's got some lungs.
If you move fast, you'll kill her.
What the fuck do you know? Riordan says.
Everything there is to know about hypothermia. And I'm willing to bet neither of you can warm her. Bring her to me if you want her to live. Stop trying to put her clothes back on. It's not going to help.
Fuck you, kid. Riordan says. But he quits trying to dress her and scoops her up. Her jeans fall to the floor. She's mostly naked in his arms. I can't see past the red rage in my eyes.
Don't move her any more than you have to. It'll force cold blood to her heart, and she'll have afterdrop.
The kid yells. Riordan walks with her real slow and easy. She stopped flailing. She's not making any noise now either. She's gone limp. Her arms and legs flop like a rag doll with each step he takes. If he killed her, I'm going to beat him bloody and eat him, piece by piece, slowly, with steak sauce. It's all I can do to keep my feet rooted where I am and not attack him as he passes. Glorious, beautiful scenes of death and destruction. Battlefields and torture chambers crowd my mind, enticing, sexual, egging me on to smash and crash and raise everything in my path with no care for the consequences, because there are no consequences for what I'm becoming. When he walks past me, my fists drip blood. But I don't fight for her. If I fight for her, I could kill her. That would turn me into something worse than an unseelie prince.
You!
The kid stabs a finger at me.
I need sleeping bags, an aluminum blanket, and hot packs. Outdoor store on 9th and Central. Get me sugar, jello, and water if you can find it. Don't waste time if you can't. Same goes for a generator, now!
I don't fetch for humans. But I'd cut the fucking moon out of the sky for her. When I return with blankets and hot packs, she's on the sidewalk on the opposite side of the street from the church. The kid with glasses is in his underwear. Apparently, dickhead doesn't wear any. Rage chokes me. I fight for control. The human part of my brain knows exactly why they took their clothes off, so they could bundle her in them. She needed everything they had. She's curled in a fetal ball, packed in their pants and shirts and jackets. The unseelie part of my brain comprehends nothing but that two male dicks are way too close to something that's mine. The kid is on top of her, on his hands and knees, with his face brushing hers like he's kissing her. Riordan looks like he's about to rip his head off. As I get closer, I see the kid is breathing just over her nose and mouth, letting his breath drift up her nostrils. I'm shaken with rage. My hands are fists again, bleeding from clenching them so tight. She keeps curling up, Riordan says.
Burrowing instinct. Freezing people do it when they're about to die.
You let her die, I say to the kid. I'll kill you every way a human can get killed. Bring you back and do it all over again.
Did you get what I need?
The kid thrusts a hand behind him, ignoring my threat.
Aluminum blanket, now, and easy when you move her,
he says over his shoulder, like he doesn't even know two homicidal maniacs are watching his every move and want him dead just for being so close to her.
Nothing sudden.
Why aluminum? I want to know exactly what he's doing, so I can do it myself when there's a next time. I'd say that there's not going to be one, but since the walls fell, there's always a next time.
Super insulation. Traps in heat. Keeps out everything else.
Riordan and I place her gently on the blanket. Then the kid stretches over her again. She's motionless. I can't even see her chest rising and falling. She's pale and still as death. It's a disturbing turn-on. I've never seen an unseelie princess, but I suspect they're like this. White and cold and beautiful.
Is she breathing?
Barely.
Her body is using everything it's got just to keep her brain and organs functioning. She needs to urinate.
You can't fucking know that, Riordan says. The kid doesn't turn his head or look at him, just talks straight up her nose. She eats and drinks constantly. Her bladder is always at least partially full. Her body is wasting precious energy trying to keep the urine in her bladder from freezing. We need that energy directed at her heart. Ergo, she needs to piss. The sooner the better. We need her conscious to do that, unless you have a handy catheter. Get her conscious, Riordan snarls. You're not putting a catheter in her, I growl. I'll do whatever I need to do to save her life. You bloody idiots, the kid says. He pops open heat packs and shoves them in her armpits and groin. Then he stretches out next to her. Roll us up in sleeping bags. I look at Riordan, and he looks at me. And for a second, I think we might both kill the kid. Riordan's more stone-faced than usual, if that's possible without turning to concrete. And his fangs are out. I look down. Riordan's dick is as big as mine. Why the bloody hell don't you wear underwear? To an unseelie prince, an exposed male dick is a call to battle. They chafe, too small and confining. Fuck you, I say.
Dudes, get over yourselves, the kid says. Roll us up. Do you want her to die?
You should never have taken her in there. I'm going to kill you for that. I say to Riordan, as I help roll up a nearly naked kid with my girl. I told her not to touch anything, Riordan says. I knew it would drop her out of fast motion. I reminded her at every scene we went to. And bring it on, Highlander, any time you think you're ready. And we all know how well she listens, the kid says dryly. Riordan gives him a look that would make grown, armed, psychopathic men shut up. There was no reason for her to touch anything. Obviously, she thought otherwise, the kid says, completely unperturbed. I was right there with her. I figured I could get her out. You figured wrong, dickhead, I say. I didn't think it would affect her so quickly if she did. It didn't do that to me when I tried it.
She's not like you. And shut up, both of you, the kid says,
and puts his face on hers again, breathing, cupping his hands around their faces to keep the warm air in. Why are you doing that? I say.
Warm air. Hypothalamus. Regulates internal temperature and will help raise her consciousness. I need her conscious so she can piss.
I would have rubbed her down to warm her. Restored her circulation.
Brilliant! You would have killed her.
Her blood is too cold. It would have stopped her heart. I don't understand why she's stripped, Riordan says. I look at him. He's doing the same thing I am, learning what to do if it happens again. Both of us would have sped off with her, trying to get her somewhere warm. And according to this kid, we both would have killed her.
Blood vessels widen. She thought she was hot. Hikers get found all the time dead in the mountains, naked with their clothes folded nearby. They get confused. Brain tries to make order out of chaos.
How do you know all this?
I despise that he knows it and I don't.
Makes him the better man for her in this situation. I want to be the better man for her in every situation.
Mom was a doctor. I nearly died of hypothermia in the Andes once.
I almost killed you, Riordan says.
She can't hear you,
the kid tells him. I wasn't talking to her.
Get me more hot packs, the kid says.
Oh, bugger, she's cold. A few weeks back, I almost killed you. The kid gives him a look. I think, what the fuck gives a kid this young the balls it takes to snarl at me and give dickhead a look like that? Riordan says, I stood in the shadows of an alley you were walking down. You wouldn't have seen me coming. She would have died tonight if I'd killed you.
Is that like an apology? I mock. Does she gasp in horror every time she sees you, Highlander?
I unfurl wings that aren't there yet, and hiss.
You both talk too much, the kid says. Shut up. Don't make me tell you again.
We shut up, which I find hysterically funny. I suddenly see us from above. I do that all the time now. I think it's because I'm losing my humanity, and it's my way of marking my descent into hell. I observe that there's only one human male at this scene, and it's not me. I see a radiant woman-child who has more curves under her clothes than I guessed, and from the way Riordan is looking at her, he didn't guess it either. She's bloodless, blue-tinged, rolled up tight in the arms of a half-naked teenager that could have been, should have been, me. Keeping vigil over her are two monsters of very different breeds, but monsters just the same. Death on her left, devil on her right. The kid looks like I did at his age, except for the glasses and a few inches of height he has on me. Dark hair, great smile, wide shoulders. The kid's going to be good looking, if he survives past next week. At the moment, I'd wager strongly against it. He's in a sleeping bag with her, holding her. She has skulls and crossbones on her underwear. It charms me beyond reason. The way I see it, if it's not Riordan in that next dark alley, it's going to be me.
16. I fight authority, and authority always wins. Scratch that. I fight authority, and probably always will. I'll make a new discovery that totally blows. Dying is the easy part. It's coming back to life that sucks. One second I'm gone. I don't even exist. The next second, I'm on fire with pain. I hear voices talking, but I feel like somebody stacked weights on my eyes and don't even try to open them. I hurt so bad I want to lose consciousness again. I groan. Miserable.
You said we could move her, so let's do it. Now. We'll take her to my place.
It's Christian. I wonder what he's doing here.
She's not going anywhere with you. She's coming with me. If you're wrong and it's not safe now, kid, you're dead.
That's Riordan. But who'd he call kid? The only person I know that he calls kid is me.
Oh, don't take chances with her. It's safe.
The dancer. I chatter.
Easy, Mega. You almost died.
He closes his hand around mine, and I hold on. I like his hand. It's big and holds easy, but sure. It's the kind of hold that says, I got you if you want me, but I'll let go if you feel like running for a while.
She's not going anywhere with either of you. She's coming with me,
he says.
The fuck she is!
Christian explodes, and I see flashing lights behind my eyelids from the hugeness of his voice and the pain I'm in. Riordan says,
she's weak, and you don't have what it takes to protect her.
I'm not weak, I mutter. I'm never weak. I slip my eyes open, and the faint light in the street nearly splits my head. I close them again. Fuck, I'm weak.
The hell I don't.
I sauntered right into your place and took her from you.
I wasn't there at the time, or you wouldn't have.
Riordan laughs.
Puny human. She comes with me,
Christian says. I feel really sick, I say. What's closest?
My place,
Christian says.
The hell it is,
Riordan says.
You don't even know where it is,
Christian says.
I know everything.
Dancer says,
Chester's.
To him I say, take me there, and hurry. I'm starving and freezing. When we walk into Chester's, the noise just about splits my skull from temple to temple. I'm so sick I'm wobbly. Riordan tells Laura to get blankets warmed and take them to a room somewhere upstairs. I hope it's soundproofed. knowing Riordan it is. Like Batman, he has all the best toys. I don't care where I go right now. I just need to lie down. I want them to stop making me walk, but I insisted that they let me walk because I hate being carried, so I'm faking. Every muscle I've got is burning and cramping. I can't think straight.
Get the kid out of here,
Riordan says to another of his men. Two men move in, close their hands on his arms. Leave Dancer alone, I say.
It's okay, Mega. Well, I've got things to do anyway. You take care, you hear?
He looks at me hard, and for a second, I want everyone to go away and leave me alone with him. Life is so easy with Dancer. I want to ask him how he ended up in the street with me. I want to know what happened. Someone saved my life tonight. I want to know who and all the details. But I don't want him here, not in Chester's. I don't want the stain of it on him. See you tonight, I say. He grins.
Hope so, Mega. Got a movie to watch. Get him out of here, now!
Riordan barks. Dancer impresses the fuck out of me when he shakes their hands off his arms and says real calm,
I can see myself out.
He doesn't shake testosterone off his skin like a wet dog. He doesn't turn into a stupid bull, throwing his horns around. He just takes care of himself. I'd watch him go, but Riordan is suddenly turning me away, steering me like I'm a go-kart. He snaps an order for warm water and jello, and tells Christian to get the feck out of his club. Christian laughs and settles on a bar stool in the sub-club closest to the stairs. As I hobble up the stairs, I see a funny thing. Riordan pauses for a sec, and I look back. He's looking out over the dance floor, down at the kiddie sub-club. And like she can feel him or something, Joe looks up, straight at him. Almost like she's been waiting for this moment. Like there's some kind of rubber band between them, and she can feel him if he tugs on it. I think her highlights are even more dramatic than they were a couple of days ago. Gold in her dark hair. She's sparkly between the boobs again. I wouldn't notice except the sparkly makes you look there. And wearing pretty bangles on her arms. She never wears jewelry. Even sick as I feel, I think Joe looks good. Riordan gives her an imperceptible nod, and she goes real still and wipes her hands on her skirt, and swallows so hard I see her throat work from here. They look at each other, and neither looks away. After a long moment, Joe nods back. And I think, what the fuck? Is she an empath like Kat? How did she know what he was saying? And what was he saying anyway? And why is she turning her tray over to somebody else? Then my legs are going out from under me because I faked as long as I could. And he's got me before I hit the floor, carrying me. And I don't even fight it because I'm too miserable. They take me to a room a few doors down from Riordan's office and put me in bed. I burrow deep into the soft mattress, sigh with relief, and pass out cold. Riordan pisses me off what can't be more than 3 minutes later by waking me back up and forcing me to drink warm jello water. At first I don't want it, but it tastes like heaven. Oh, what happened? I say. Did I, like, die and come back? Huh, what an adventure! I wonder if this'll get put into the legend of me when I do die. I wonder how many times I might kick death's ass in my life. How wicked cool is that?
Drink.
Where'd Dancer come from? My stomach cramps. Oh, that's hurting my stomach.
Stop gulping. Take small sips.
I see another funny thing when he pours a second glass of warm jello water. Dude, shake much?
I got too cold.
Lore laughs and gives him a look.
Or too hot. Get out of here, I've got it.
Riordan looks at my empty glass. I've drained the pitcher already and I want more.
I'll get it,
Lore says.
Go do what you need to do, boss.
I wonder what he needs to do, why he's shaking. If this is his weakness, I want to know all about it. Too bad I'm about to pass out again. Riordan stands up.
Take care of her.
He walks out. Law says.
Sleep, kid. I'll be back before you know it. With candy bars.
I slump into the pillows, curl up and sigh. Candy bars. Life is sweet. All I have to do is lie here where it's cozy and warm and wait for them. They heated blankets for me. Someone's bringing me candy bars in bed. I'm going to sleep for days. I wonder what happened. Dying to talk to Dancer. But it'll have to wait. I'm drifting, just about to pass out again, when I suddenly get wired, struck by a certainty that pisses me all kinds of off. I know why Riordan gave Joe that look. Because they're in his office right now, talking about me, conspiring, with Joe all worried about me because I almost died. And they're trying to figure out what to do with me since I don't follow rules and almost got myself killed tonight. I hate it when adults have their stupid powwows about me. They always end with me getting read the Riot Act and handed a whole new list of rules that nobody in their right mind could possibly obey, most of which aren't even logical or smart. How the feck was I supposed to know if I touched one tiny little thing, it would snap me out of freeze frame? Why couldn't he have just told me that? I would never have done it. Thinking about how I didn't almost get myself killed tonight, really, he did, I start to steam from the inside and warm right up from sheer temper. I crawl out from under my huddle of blankets, get my sword, stumble to the door, and wobble out into the hall. I look up and down but don't see anybody, 'cause, like, everybody's probably already in his office, dissing me. I careen down the hall, stumbling from wall to wall, using them to steady me until I make it to his door. Then I slap my palm where I always see and put his, and the door slides open. I don't even wait for it to finish opening before I begin airing my gripes. It's not my fault I almost got killed, dude. It's your fault, and here's how... Oh, you! I shake my head, horrified horrified. My mouth hangs open with nothing coming out. Riordan looks over his shoulder at me. He's got Joe in there, but they're not talking. She's bent over his desk with her skirt up, and he's doing that thing I wish I'd never seen him doing. Holy travel agent, did I, like, go through a time warp or something? How long did it take me to get here? Don't grown-ups do other things before they get to this point? Like, maybe hug and kiss? Make out for a little while? I move fast and all, but... Dude! Kind of thinking some things would be nice. A little slow. Like, maybe give you a chance to get ready for stuff that's happening. Joe gasps and turns bright red. Oh, Danny, get out of here! I'm seeing more of Joe than I ever wanted to. They aren't talking about me. They weren't even thinking about me. Like I wasn't even lying a few doors down the hall on my deathbed, with obviously nobody worrying about me at all. You are such a traitor. Sleeping with the enemy. What's wrong with you? This is just too gross for my eyeballs.
Go back to bed, Danny.
Riordan says, looking at me funny. I hate him. And I hate her. And I hate his stupid retracting door. I can't even slam it on the way out. I wake up feeling amazing. Usually I wake up confused and cross. I'm thinking maybe I should almost get killed more often. I have no clue why I feel so good, but I love it, so I stretch, milking it for all I can get. My muscles are totally smooth and happy and relaxed, and I don't feel a bruise anywhere, which is impossible. My muscles are always knotted somewhere. Bruises are me. This feels like a brand new body. I figure I must be in some kind of pre-waking state I've never been in before, where the brain's been turned on, but the body's still numb. I feel candy bars in bed with me, melty in my warm nest. One smashed between my cheek and the pillow. I feel another plastered to my butt. I scooch them both out, tear one open, and eat it without opening my eyes, blissfully happy. I could get used to this. No pain from assorted bumps and bruises. Breakfast in bed. Then I remember where I am. Chester's. And I remember what I saw before I fell asleep. Riordan doing the dirty with Joe. On his desk. Gah! Like I'm ever going to be able to look at his desk again. How am I supposed to sit in his office now? I'm so pissed off I shoot bolt upright in bed and swallow the last half of my candy bar so fast it gets stuck in my throat. I start choking, and all of a sudden, a fist slams into my back. My mouth pops open, and half a mangled candy bar goes flying into the glass wall with a gooey chocolate splat. It's too gross for me so early in the morning. My stomach heaves, and I double over trying to keep it down. Ugh, yeah, this is more like how I wake up, all screwed up and confused. When I lived at the Abbey, Ro told me I have growing pains, and that superheroes have them worse than most people. She said that's why I need to sleep so hard and deep, and wake up so slow, because my body has to do more work to repair me on a cellular level. Makes scientific sense.
Might help, kid,
Lore says behind me.
If you chew more than once before you swallow.
I never chew more than once. I wouldn't be able to eat fast enough if I did. I'd have to spend my whole day chewing. I'd get jaw muscles the size of Popeye's biceps.
You're too young to know who Popeye is.
When you spent most of your childhood in a cage in front of a TV, you know who everybody is. I can sing the songs for Green Acres and Gilligan's Island. I even know who that girl was. I learned everything I know about the world from watching TV. There's a whole lot of psychology in there if you're paying attention, and I was a captive audience. Rose said I got all my melodrama from growing up that way. That I think folks are supposed to be larger than life, like they are in shows. Dude, of course I do. But I didn't need TV to tell me that. Life's a choice. You can live in black and white, or you can live in color. I'll take every shade of the rainbow and the gazillion in between. I push up from the bed, grab my sword, and head for the door. Lore's in front of it, arms folded over his chest.
Boss didn't say you could leave.
I didn't say your boss could boink Joe. I say real calm-like, but inside I'm seething. I don't know why I feel so betrayed. Why do I care? They're grown-ups. Grown-ups never make sense. Joe doesn't even like him. And I know he doesn't give a shit about Joe.
Honey, boss don't ask nobody who he fucks.
Well, he ain't gonna do it to Joe again. Get out of my way. Move. I'm going to tell her I'm never talking to her if she has sex with him ever again. I'll make her choose, and she'll choose me.
So you can start some shit?
Yep. I don't even try to deny it. I'm ready to knock heads, and I'm not going to feel better until I make somebody else as miserable as I am. He looks down at me. I slant my jaw at a jauntier angle, and I can tell he's trying not to laugh. What, you think I'm funny? I'm so sick of people smiling at me like that. My hand goes to the hilt of my sword. It closes on his hand. They're all faster than me. I'm not funny. I'm dangerous. You just wait and see. I'm not full grown yet, but when I am, I'm going to kick your ass from one end of Chester's to the other. You just wait and see. He lets go of my sword and moves out of my way, laughing.
Go ahead, kid. Raise some hell. Been boring around here lately.
On my way out the door, I decide maybe I could like Law. He lives in color, too. When I blow past Riordan's office, I think I feel a breeze and spin around real fast, ready to fight him if I have to. But nobody's there. I shake my head and bounce down the stairs, freeze framing sideways in between steps, because I have so much energy this morning, checking out the dance floor as I go. It's packed and the place is rocking. Looks like I either didn't sleep long, or I slept a whole day until the next night, because there's Joe, waiting tables in the kiddie sub club, looking all long-legged and... Jeez! I squint over the railing at her. Happy? She's like... glowing. What does she think? That this is some kind of fairy tale she's living? It ain't. These fairies maim and kill, and the dude she's having sex with lets them. How can she glow about that? There wasn't even any romance or anything. Just, gah, I don't even want to think about it. I can't scrape that memory off the inside of my skull fast enough. I freeze frame through the club, hyper fast, knocking folks out of my way left and right. Hearing grunts all around makes me feel better about stuff. When I stop in front of her, she looks startled, then mad. What the fuck does she have to be mad at me about? She removes the last drink from her tray, sits it on a napkin in front of a rhino boy, then holds the tray to her chest, her arms around it like it's a shield or something. Traitor! Danny, don't do this. Not here. Not now. You did that up there, I say, flinging my arm up toward Ryden's office, without worrying for one tiny little sec about my here and now. The whole time I was practically dying, you were having sex two doors down with a dude you came to rescue me from. From his dungeon? Like, where he was holding me prisoner? Remember? It's not like that. What? I wasn't in the dungeon? Or you didn't come to rescue me from him? Don't tell me you weren't having sex. I saw what I saw. I didn't believe he'd hurt you. And he didn't. He didn't hurt either of us. He's got us both working like dogs for him. You're waiting on Faye, and I'm running around on his feckin' leash. He feeds people to the Faye, Joe. He kills them. He does not. He runs a club. It's not his fault if people want to die. What is he supposed to do? Talk them out of it? Start a Chester's counseling service? What do you expect of him, Danny? I stare at her in disbelief. You've got to feckin' be kidding me. You're going to defend him? Stockholm Syndrome much, Joe? I mock. She moves to an empty table and begins to clear it, stacking dirty dishes on her tray. It makes me madder that she's cleaning up after these monsters. Doubly mad that she looks so good doing it. Joe's making herself prettier. I don't understand it. She used to be perfectly happy wearing jeans and a t-shirt and no makeup and just hanging with the girls. We had PJ parties and watched movies. Now she's all super glam, Joe. I hate it. I thought you didn't know what that was. I looked it up. And dude, you got it bad. You're letting him screw you every which way. How long do you think it's going to last? You think he's going to bring you flowers? You think you're going to, like, go steady with the owner of Chester's? She stacks a small tower of glasses on her tray and gives me an exasperated look. Can we just not do this right now? Sure. If you tell me you'll never have sex with him again, I'll go away. Right now. End of conversation. Her mouth tightens. As she wipes the table off with a damp cloth, she glances up at his office. It pisses me off how soft her face goes when she looks up. The tension fades, and she looks like a woman in love. I hate it. I hate him. She looks back at me. No, Danny. I won't. And stay out of this. It's none of your business. This is grown-up stuff between grown-ups. She turns away and heads for the bar with her cluttered tray. Distantly, I hear Faye calling orders, trying to get her attention. But I don't care. I want her attention. I freeze frame in behind her, hard and fast, causing a wicked breeze in the sub-club, and nearly knocking the tray from her hands. She has to work hard to catch it. Almost doesn't. Riordan's not the only one that can screw with people and things. Don't walk away from me, I'm not done yet. Yes, you are. A hiss in her ear. Don't you get it? Dude's never going to love you. He's not wired that way. He's just using you, and he's going to throw you away, and then there you're going to be like a dirty piece of toilet paper he doesn't want anymore. She sucks in a breath and gives me a look over her shoulder that just feckin' slays me. I drown in instant self-hate for saying what I just said. And I hate him, because I know it's true. Joe will never be able to keep Riordan's interest. She's too good. Clean and nice inside. She doesn't have an ounce of malice or deceit or unkind feelings or anything bad in her. She's not complicated enough for him. He's twisted like that. I chose the wrong person to chew out. I should have chosen him. He's going to hurt her, and I'm never going to forgive him. So here I am, hurting her first. Dude, stupid much? Do you really think I don't know that? If we weren't in Chester's, I'm pretty sure the wet in her eyes would start to slide down her cheeks. All the sudden, I'm miserable I said anything about any of it. I want to hug her. I want to run away. I don't want Joe to hurt. I should have kept my mouth shut. I can't keep my mouth shut. Grown-ups are so strange, but I don't understand. Then why? Why would you do something that you know is going to end up bad? Why would anyone ever do something they know is going to hurt them? You're too young to be talking about this kind of stuff. Oh, come on, Joe, it's me. I was never young. Life didn't happen that way in my world. Tell me. It's complicated. Like everything isn't. Try. She doesn't say anything, so I just stand and wait. A long silence usually makes people fill it up with something. It stretches. Finally, she looks away like she's embarrassed, and so soft it's almost like she's talking to herself, not me at all. She says, "Every morning he comes to the top of the stairs and looks down over the club, and he stands there, so big and powerful and beautiful and..." She swallows hard, like her mouth just went totally dry. Sexy. God, so unbelievably sexy. Her eyes get a weird, intense look, like she's remembering something. Then she makes a soft noise and doesn't say anything for a second. And he's funny. Do you know he's funny? You must know that. You spend a lot of time with him. I fist my hands. Sure I do. I didn't know she did. What do they do? Crack jokes with each other like Dancer and me? Her expression is far off. See in a memory. Every morning when the night shift ends, he singles out a woman in the crowd and he nods at her. She goes upstairs, and when she eventually shows up in the club again, she looks like... She shivers like she just got goosebumps. And you wonder what he did that made her look like that. You watch her walking around, smiling, moving different than she moved before she went to him. And you know something happened up there that made her feel more alive than she ever felt before. That she got to be the way you hope you'll get to be with a man, even if it's just once in your life. A man has to see women a certain way for it to be that way. You try not to think about him, but it doesn't work. I swore if he ever gave me that nod, I wouldn't go. Dude, wake up call, you went. I know. She's glowing again like she won some kind of prize instead of got picked by a Class A sociopath to be his disposable lube. Why him? I don't understand, and I want to. I don't want to feel like Joe's a traitor. I lost Mac. I don't want to lose Joe, too. You know what he's like. He's not a bad man, Danny. Bullshit! Everything isn't black and white like you want it to be. Some things are, and Riordan's blacker than black. He's one of the bad guys. Period. End of subject. I'm pissed. She needs to wake up and smell the coffee burning before the whole feckin' coffee maker goes up in flames. And when he comes to those stairs tomorrow and chooses someone else, I say, it's only a matter of time, Joe. You know he will. You'll be standing here looking all dreamy like you do right now, and it'll be the waitress next to you that he chooses. And you'll never go upstairs again, because a dude like that don't press the replay button. When he's done, he's done. How are you going to feel then? She turns away. I go after her, grab her elbow, make her stop. Well, what do you think, Joe, that you're special? That you'll be the one that changes him? Give me a feckin' break. You think you and him are going to pick out China patterns together? Register for flatware? She inhales like she forgot to breathe. Then, when she remembered, couldn't get air fast enough. I know what I'm doing, Danny. Good, then you can explain it to me, because it sure looks like every shade of stupid from where I'm standing. She's distant again, talking soft, like I'm not even here. Even with my super hearing, I lean in to catch it. There are men you build a future with, Danny, And then there are men that you know going in that you're only making a memory with. I know the difference. Doesn't look like it to me. Some memories are worth the price. I'll deal with it. But she won't. I know she won't. I know Joe. She's brilliant and kind and has the heart of a warrior, but she doesn't have ice and razor blades inside where your soul is supposed to be. She loves. And she doesn't know how to take it back when you have to, because sometimes you sure as feck have to. Got to grab it up with both hands and pull it back before somebody turns it into knives and uses it to cut you to pieces. She's not going to be able to deal with it good at all, and I'm going to have to clean up the mess he made and kill him. I suck in a breath. You're too stupid to live, and I'm not talking to you anymore. You need to pull your head out. You need to quit judging everyone. You don't know shit about me, and I'd rather judge people than be a pansy ass that can't make her mind up about anyone or anything and get sucked into all kinds of stupid shit. Danny, please don't. My ears are full. I can't hear anymore. I turn away and start to slip into freeze frame. I have no idea what makes me look up. Kind of like a rubber band feeling, like it's fused into my gut, and like something at the top of the stairs is pulling at my opposite end. Ryden is standing at the top of the stairs looking down at me, and I think what Joe said about him being big and powerful and beautiful. We lock eyes. Mine said, "Don't you ever choose her again. You leave her alone." His said something I don't get at all. Then he does that ocular shiver thing all over me, and I get a real clear, "Go home, kid." He looks right past me at Joe, and he nods. 17. These girls fall like dominoes.
"We are not so different, you and I,"
Cruz says as he moves inside me.
"Both born to lead."
I try desperately to wake myself. I'm in the dreaming, and he has me in his wings. The moment I fell asleep, he was there, waiting for me at the end of a white marble path in a garden of exquisite blood roses. He lays me on them, with a crush of velvet petals. I brace for the thorns.
"You must not rue it, Cat. The sun does not rue that it rises."
He goes deep, filling me completely, making every nerve ending in my body vibrate with erotic ecstasy. I arch my back and hiss with pleasure.
"We will rule the world, and they will love us. We will save them." "Dreaming of me, are you now, my sweet cat?"
Like a dropped snow globe, my dream world shatters, and I remember why I asked Sean to stay the night with me at the Abbey. Why I slipped him around back and into my suite of rooms. To save me from Cruz. To ground me to the world I know and love. I roll into Sean's arms and press against him, shuddering with fear that I pretend his desire. We make love quick and hard and fast. He never knows I'm trying to erase someone else. Someone that makes me come harder, better, more. Sean, my love, my childhood friend, teenage sweetheart, mate to my soul. I've never known life without him. We shared a playpen and went to our first day of school together. We got the measles the same week, swapped our first flu, snuggled in blankets in front of the TV. We got pimples and got rid of them. He was there the night I started my period, and I was there the day his voice began to change. We know everything about each other. Our history is rich and long. I love his dark eyes, his black hair and fair Irish skin. I love the way he wears a fisherman's sweater with faded jeans and always has a quick smile. I love how strong his arms are from years of pulling fishing nets, and the way his long-limbed body moves, how he looks when he's lost in a good book, the way he feels moving inside me.
"Are you all right, love?"
He brushes a tangle of hair from my face. I lay my head on his chest and listen to his heart beating, solid and sure. Sometimes I think he has a touch of my she-seer gift. He reads me so well. He's known about my emotional empathy since we were children. Nothing about me disturbs him. A rare gift from those who fully understand what I do. Few can lie to me. I sense their inner conflict, unless they suffer no guilt or scruple about anything, and I've been blessed to encounter only a handful of those in my life, all of them in or near Chester's recently. I don't know the truth, only that there is a lie. It takes a scrupulously honest man to love me. That's my Sean. We learned to trust each other completely before we were old enough to have learned suspicion. What if I can't do it? I say. I don't elaborate. With Sean, few words are necessary. We've been finishing each other's sentences since we were young. We were virgins when we made love the first time. There's never been anyone else for either of us. Now I have an invisible lover violating everything I hold dear, making me want him and not my Sean. He laughs.
God, sweetheart, you can do anything.
My heart feels like a rock in my chest. I burn with shame and deceit. I've made love in my dreams in exquisite detail with another man, and have done so every night for over a week. I've taken him in my mouth, felt him at the entrance of my womb, places that are Sean's alone. But what if I can't? What if I make mistakes that cost lives? He rolls onto his side and pulls me back into him, spooning. I press in. We fit together perfectly, like we were carved from the same piece of wood, from the same tree.
Whoosh, sweet cat. I'm here. I'll always be here. Together we can do anything. You know that. Remember our vows.
I pull his arms tighter around me. We were young, so young. Everything was simple then. We were 15, deliriously and passionately in love, delighted by our developing bodies, growing up together into one. We stole off to Paradise Point out by the lighthouse, dressed up like it was a wedding day, and took vows with each other. We came from broken families, temperamental fighting families, and we learned from watching them. Too much passion burns, tenderness fuses. We knew what it took to stay together. It was nothing fancy. Common sense, really.
If you weaken, I'll be strong.
If you get lost, I'll be your way home.
If you despair, I'll bring you joy.
I will love you until the end of time. I love you, Sean O'Bannon. Never leave me.
Wild horses, Cat. Couldn't drag me an inch. You're the only one for me. Always.
There's the smile in his voice. We make love again, and this time when dark wings try to shadow me, they fail. There's no one else in bed with me but my Sean. I watch him dress while dawn paints pale white rectangles around the heavy drapes. I have young charges at the Abbey, and we are not wed. We'd begun making plans to marry before the walls fell, but our families interfered. The O'Banions tried to stop it. When they realized Sean was having none of it, they tried to take over and turn it into the spectacle of the decade. An O'Banion marries a McLaughlin. It would have been a grand step up for my family. We were small-time criminals. His family controlled nearly all Dublin's mob underbelly. I grew up with Sean because my mother was his nanny. We'd been fighting bitterly with our parents for months before the walls fell and billions died, including our families. Where else would they have been than out in the riots, watching the chaos, trying to profit from the lawlessness? I can't pretend that I'm sorry for their deaths, and I won't feel ashamed that I'm not. The only deaths I rue are those of my two half-brothers that survived the fall, only to be killed by shades. Rowena didn't teach us about eating on Sealy in time for me to save them. My parents and other siblings were corrupt to the core. Sometimes people are born into the wrong family. Sean and I turned our backs on them years ago, but our families never stopped pressuring us and never accepted letting us go. I used to worry so much about what they would do to Sean, how they might try to force him into the family ways. But now such worries are a thing of the past. It's today, and we're free. As soon as we get a quiet moment and a priest, we plan to wed. Some of the girls are hoping we'll decide to make a lovely ceremony of it here at the Abbey. A wedding in times like these can be an uplifting thing, but I'll not make my wedding into something for another. It's between Sean and God and me. When he holds my face in his hands and kisses me, I feel his heart, both against my chest and with my gift. He's happy. It's all I need. He asks if I'll have him again tonight, and I smile and kiss him. Aye, and every night thereafter, and well, you know it. If you're fishing for a compliment, my bonny Sean, I've thousands for you. But as he slips out, my laughter dies and I stare at the bed. I should tell him what's happening. I would wish it from him. I would fight for him at night against my invisible foe. We would stand together as one. I would know all the secrets of his tormenting succubus, the better to defeat her. But I can't. I just can't. It happened before I could stop it the first time. I've had intimate carnal knowledge of another man. I've felt things with Cruz I've never felt with Sean. And I hate myself, and I can't tell him. I just can't. So I'm walking home slow-mo Joe style, pissed off, but having a hard time focusing on being pissed off, because my body feels so good. My mind's grumpy, but my body's saying, hey, dude, let's play. I kick a can down the alley and send it flying into a wall, and I do mean into it. It flattens and gets impacted in the brick, and I crack up. Someday somebody's going to see it and be like, dude, what happened here? I leave clues about me all over the city, bending sculptures and broken street lamps into twisty D's for Danny and dude and dangerous, leaving my calling card for folks to see. It's my bat signal, letting the world know somebody is out there, watching, caring. I got a whole day stretching ahead of me and almost can't believe it. It feels like old times. I think about what to do with myself. Stupid as it is, I resent working on the ice mystery during the day because Riordan's taking such a big chunk of my time every night. But I don't have the luxury of being stupid when folks' lives are at stake. It sure would be nice if I could get Dancer's super brain in on it. Trouble is, I should also head out to the Abbey for a checkup. It's been a while since I was out there, and she-sheep can get in trouble faster than I can waggle my ass and say, bah! I got a worried feeling about them I ain't been able to shake. Then there's Inspector Jane. I'm pretty sure I'm due for a cage-cleaning session. I mosey through Temple Bar, taking my time, drinking my city in, trying to decide how to prioritize my day. Kind of reveling in the simple fact that the choice is mine for a change. I used to love this part of town before the walls fell. So much cool stuff happening every night with tourists and pubs and new fae to spy on and kill. I found out what it was like to live in these streets after Mom died. No collar, no cage. Just a crazy old witch I learned to keep a little afraid of me all the time. Then Matt came and the streets got even cooler. There's nothing like having a sidekick superhero to pal around with, especially one that was part sister, part mom, and all best friend. Now, like the rest of my city, Temple Bar is a mess. Abandoned cars, wrecked and stripped or shoved up on the sidewalks, opening a tight lane down the middle of the street for traffic. There's broken glass everywhere from shattered windows and street lamps. You can hardly take a step that doesn't crunch. Newspapers and trash and husks of what used to be people blow down the streets. On a gray, rainy day, it can look real grim, if you don't superimpose a bright future over it. Mac's mom is heading up some kind of green-up program, and I hear her dad is working on a clean-up program, as well as hearing disputes and stuff. And one day Dublin's going to be rocking and full of crack again. I saunter past the bright red facade of the Temple Bar of the district and feel it before I even turn the corner. I stop instantly. It's like a breeze blowing down on me from a glacier. I consider not turning the corner. I haven't investigated one of these scenes alone. I could nudge Riordan this way tonight and pretend we just found it. It's not like they changed too much between recently iced and iced for a few days. Besides, if I turn the corner and find kids dead, it'll totally ruin my day. Almost dying is